Hello, Vashon. This is Chris Austin with Dove Speaks, and we're here for another show, another new show. And today we have a very special guest, Deborah King, who is working with Dove. And Deborah, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, please explain what it is you do.
So I am a yoga teacher, and I specialize in therapeutic applications of yoga. I'm a candidate in the process of getting my international certification as a yoga therapist.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Just when you can't travel, you get a...
Exactly. Yeah, I was supposed to graduate in March, so we'll see.
Oh! Whoa.
But I'm lucky. I've been doing the work for a long time, so I get to continue to do what I love.
Yeah.
So I basically adapt the yoga practices for the individuals, often people who are dealing with special circumstances. And I specialize especially in trauma and PTSD, MS and other neurological complications, cancer, and both physical and emotional chronic pain. So chronic pain, but also anxiety and depression.
Wow, this must be some lively classes. That is impressive. I didn't know you could use yoga for all those things.
Yeah.
I thought you just so you can touch your toes.
Right. Well, a lot of people think about it like that, right?
Yeah. I'm an idiot, so please.
No, you're not an idiot. But I think, I mean, my passion for the therapeutics is really also about the passion for the roots of yoga, which mm-hmm. is that yoga is not about touching your toes. Yoga is a process of transformation and about being present to yourself as a whole and the wholeness that's inherent to your nature.
Wow.
So that's what yoga is.
You know, Lululemon and their yoga pants, that's not anywhere on their website.
I know. This is the problem with some of our culture.
Yes,
anyway,
well.
You know.
Now, a guy like me, I'm about as flexible as an icicle. Okay. Mm-hmm. So never done it. I'm surprised I'm even talking about it, frankly. How would that help? How would your class help me?
So, like I said, it, you know, it's really not about the poses or the mm-hmm. shapes you make. So, you know, I work a lot with people with disabilities and, you know, people will first be worried, well, I'm in a wheelchair or I can't move my leg.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter, you know. So it's not about the shape. What you're looking for is the connection between the mind and the body,
mm-hmm.
the connection to the sense of yourself as a whole. And learning to be present with the full experience that you're having. So all the practices, all the poses, all the breathing, all the meditation techniques, those are techniques that bring you to having more of a sense of that wholeness that's already part of you. That's what yoga is.
Okay. So you can't show up with like earbuds in, jam into some rock and roll and do your class.
I could, but it probably wouldn't work out so well.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to rethink coming to your class. No, so kind of take us through a class, maybe. I know that you said you do this at Swedish.
Yeah. And then I also have upcoming my workshop in partnership with the Dove Project, mm-hmm. which is a four-week workshop for people dealing with trauma, and we're focusing especially on the way trauma, anxiety, and depression may be compounded by COVID.
Oh my gosh, it is. I mean, for even things that aren't traumatic, they're traumatic now.
Exactly, yeah, because the isolation affects us. I mean, we're meant to co-regulate, to be regulating in the presence of other people mm-hmm. and in relationship. And so a lot of people are experiencing symptoms that they haven't experienced before. So, you know, a class like that, or, you know, basically any therapeutic class, what I'm utilizing is I'll just kind of like go, well, what are the tools that we need in order to make this person coming into the experience of their body a safe place? Because it can take some time.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's experiencing a lot of trauma or a lot of pain, something like that, you know, bringing your attention to your body can be very, very complicated and difficult. So what I want first is not to push them into that, but to give them tools so that they have control over how much they do. So the first thing that I want people to know and the first thing I teach is this concept of autonomy, of having control over what your body does and how, about having space, your own space, and about creating that sense of I'm not dictating this practice, I'm offering possibilities for folks to find what works for them. So for example, if I'm teaching a class with people in wheelchairs or with limited mobility in any way, I might just really emphasize that any amount of movement is enough. And sometimes the movement is the connection of the breath to that body part. It doesn't even have to move to be part of the practice.
Just the sense of where it is, not the movement, is what your mind is trying to do. Like,
yes.
I know my shoulder's there. And I'm...
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And then movement might be part of that, depending, you know, depending on what moves, what doesn't move.
Yeah.
Which will be different for anyone. And that there are choices for what people do and don't do. And that the most important thing they can do is listen to themselves, you know,
sure.
as the first authority rather than me.
Yeah. Right. You're the guide, not the dictator.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So what would you tell somebody? I'm sure the folks out there listening and thinking, well, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. You know, I can handle this. And and probably you may even get clients that have numbed this anxiety with drugs and alcohol and things like that. What kind of trauma do you need, I guess, to come to your class?
Anyone is welcome for this particular class. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done classes that were more specific before. Like we've done classes specific to sexual and domestic violence survivors.
Mm-hmm.
This is really open to anyone who feels they might benefit. And, you know, I mean, those things, I think, like what you just said about, yeah, we numb out, we use substances. So if we look at trauma from kind of a holistic perspective, our bodies have ways of getting us through the unfathomable. So, you know, I think it's important to look at trauma symptoms, PTSD symptoms, as not just obstacles, but ways that our bodies have been saving us and kind of just appreciating, okay, this is the way I've been functioning.
Sure.
Right? So, you know, there are kind of two, like the nervous system is very complicated, but there are kind of two facets of the protection system that we might get caught in. And this is an oversimplification because many people kind of go, there's the fight or flight response, which is like that chronic state of hypervigilance where someone is always up and on and, you know, very tense.
Surveillance of their surroundings, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the other side, which is dissociation, the freeze response, the collapse response, where someone may, you know, not feel pain, go to a place where they don't feel pain, or just be like depression is part of that spectrum in terms of the nervous system. Lack of sensation can be part of that.
Yeah.
So can dizziness. I mean, can be. I'm not saying always is. But so those two facets are kind of ways we protect ourselves. And so it's important, I think, first to appreciate like, oh, this is how I've gotten through this impossible thing.
Yeah.
And so like you're recognizing it's so easy for people who have experienced trauma to feel they can't trust their instincts because they keep responding in this way that they feel caught in that doesn't serve them. But really, if you can see, oh, I'm doing this for a reason, it gives you a greater lens to see like, yes, I can trust myself. And as I become aware of what's happening in myself, I notice I have more choices. So if we can like take the judgment out of our experience, it takes us a long way towards recognizing our wholeness.
Yeah. You know, that's so interesting. I had a relative, in my family and he was, MPD. Multiple personality disorder. In his family, he grew up in a very abusive family. And it was exactly what you said. I would go and kind of help on a few appointments and then drive, you know, because he wasn't in a place to drive. And his therapist was telling me that this is a really elegant way of protecting him, dissociating from what happened, that he could function in other parts of his life and, you know, hold a job and stuff. you know, getting through that and integrating him mm-hmm. back to a whole was the purpose of the therapy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he described, and I said, well, what is a dissociative state? And he gave me this example. He said, have you ever been driving long road trip by yourself, long straight road, and all of a sudden you kind of wake up and you're in the moment again? Like, who was driving mm-hmm, for the last exactly. couple minutes? Because I was out of it. I was just kind of off of the fairies in dreamland, you know, thinking yeah. about stuff.
Yeah.
And that, he said, was a type of dissociated state that I think some people can relate to.
Yes, definitely. And then some people use substances to dissociate, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, there can be a lot of, you know, sometimes I'll be working, especially pre-COVID, I did a lot of private work, and it would often take several months for someone to start talking to me about a substance issue because there's so much shame around mm-hmm. that. But, you know, when we, like, by that time, like, we understand what their patterns are, their survival patterns are. And almost always what I would notice is that that substance would mirror the place their nervous system would go to protect them, you know.
Oh.
So, you know, people who tend to dissociate might be more drawn to substances that put them in more of a dissociative state, like alcohol or depressants, etc. And people who are kind of protect themselves in that hypervigilant state might actually be drawn to more.
Oh, like cocaine, hyperstimulants.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And it can definitely work opposite too. I mean, mm-hmm. and I'm not a therapist or a medical professional, so I want to be clear. Like, I'm not giving medical advice.
We're not doing that, Vashon.
Yeah.
I right, came to the exactly. wrong show for medical advice.
This is just like experiential, yeah. is that we're noticing the patterns. And it's interesting because having that lens, I think, allows a little more self-compassion. Oh, this is why I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like, I'm doing this because there's something wrong with me, which there isn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Very interesting. So is this true? Let's say, you know, I can see people coming to you with kind of a psychological problem, PTSD. Mm-hmm. And I can see somebody coming to you with a physical problem, like you mentioned, MS. Does physical always have a mental aspect? And does mental always have a physical?
That's a great question. I mean, the perspective of yoga, which is kind of my world, mm-hmm. is that, yes, everything is always interrelated. So in yoga, like, we think of the five sheaths of the body, which go from the physical, the food body, we call mm-hmm. it.
Okay.
Through the breath and energetic body, through the mental, emotional body, through the witness body, and then the bliss body, we call it. And all those, you know, all those parts are, we describe them separately, but they are interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the perspective of yoga is that we are always, you know, one part of us is always affecting the other. That is different. I think I want to be clear here, because sometimes people, you know, experiencing illnesses get like this, there's this weird new age, like, blamey thing that I do not want to be part of, which is like, oh, you know, you have that because of this thinking pattern, which is just not true.
What?
It's not true. So I just want to say that's not true. It's not your fault. But like, understanding the ways we're interrelated. So it's like something like MS, which is neurological, and there's a lot of things we don't understand. We do understand that symptoms are exacerbated by stress.
Mm-hmm.
So we can work with, you know, how do we address the emotional and mental stress that can affect you physically.
Oh, I can completely understand that. Many years ago, I had chronic sciatica,
mm-hmm.
and there is nothing worse than chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
You just go out of your mind.
Yeah.
It's unrelenting.
Yes. And it affects you emotionally,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sleep well. I was a dentist at the time, and I had to do stand-up dentistry because I couldn't sit down.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and you lean over a patient, right? It's not like a car where you can put your hand on it to brace yourself.
Yeah.
So I had to stand up. But it went on for over a year. And I just remember going bonkers with it.
Yeah.
So I got that part.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I really notice, and this is just my perspective working with yoga, is that you know, physical pain doesn't tend to shift, like something chronic, like sciatica, which you really can alleviate, you know, as opposed to a chronic illness, which is, you know, the neurological system is reacting in a certain way. But with sciatica or, you know, back pain or such like that, what I notice is that those patterns really can shift, but it's not about the stretches. It's really about when the breath changes is what I notice, is when the breath starts to change. The nerve, that what that it does is it says, okay, the nervous system is adapting to a new pattern, because pain is a sympathetic nervous system response. It's a protective response. So it might come from a physical thing, like a nerve being pinched, right? But then your nervous system goes, this is not okay. We got to protect you. And you get tenser.
Sure.
So you may not be able to control the original thing, but what you can learn to work with is the nervous system response to the original
thing. Sure, that kind of cascade of events that happens after the initial trauma.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
So as you learn to work with your nervous system, then it changes your physical pain. Uh-huh. And those are things that, you know, people with neurological issues and cancer, et cetera, can also work with.
Well, if we go back to this Dove class, and I'm sorry, when were the dates for that?
Yeah, it's October 1st to the 22nd, so Thursday afternoons, 4 to 5:30 online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, like what is the physical setup of how does this work? So you're in your home?
Yeah, you're in your home online. Eventually we'll be able to do them in person again. But right now we're online, and it's important to me that the work is accessible for everyone. So, you know, there's just, I mean, I work with a population where there are only very few classes that they can actually come to. So to me, it's really important that people know that if they have disabilities or restrictions that are physical and they think they can't do yoga, that I am happy to adapt the practice. And last time when we did it in May, you know, there was a few people who had, I made sure there were chair options all the way through. So, you know, folks can come. I prefer to know if that's comfortable for people to just let me know this is what I'm dealing with so that I can make sure those adaptions are in there, you know.
Yeah, and I'm guessing this is going to be a class, like I said, online, but it's online where only you can see the audience.
So, yeah, that's a really good question, because privacy, especially with people dealing with trauma, is really important. And it's tricky. It's tricky. So what I did last time and what I'm going to do again is give the option so that if folks don't turn on their camera or they turn off their camera, their name will not be there as well.
Oh,
so that
very
no one
good.
Sees
yeah.
them. And then they also have the choice if they want to be on, you know. It's just entirely what boundary feels best to them. But, you know, and so because that is tricky with being online, because, you know, basically usually you see on Zoom, you usually see everyone's name at least.
Yeah.
You see everything. And last time we were able to clarify that if you turn off, there's a way to turn off that. So if people come in and they don't have their camera on, no one will know they're there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they can see you, of course.
Yes, they can see me.
In a practical sense, how much room do you need?
You don't need a lot. Like, you know, maybe 6 feet around you is good. You know, and yeah, it doesn't need to be a big space. It can be basically anywhere. You don't need equipment. You don't need props. Props can be nice, but you can use cushions from your sofa, books. You can use stuff that's around you.
Are there any goats involved?
No.
No?
Goat
yoga is a thing,
man. It is a thing. It is a thing. Yeah, you know, it's just not my thing.
Could you tell me how that got started? Like,
I do not have a clue.
Hoofed animal to crawl on you. How about a cat? Someone, you know, paws.
I don't know. There's a lot of offshoots of yoga that I don't teach. So.
Well, probably a lot of upkeep, bringing your goat to class and whatnot. So after this, now I'm sure it's not a one-time shot. You know, you're not fixed once you have this class in October.
No.
What would be
so
logical?
Yeah, what we want is just to give people the tools to begin to be able to come into a more embodied place. Being able to sense their body's responses, their breath responses, their emotional responses. And that is a journey. So Dr. Peter Levine, who founded Somatic Experiencing Therapy, which is a way of working with trauma, and a lot of it is really drawn from yoga. If it, you look at the practices, it's like it's all yoga. What he talks about is the importance of what he calls titration. So little bits at a time. So that like permission piece that I started with is really crucial so that people don't feel like they have to keep going when they get uncomfortable. So later in healing, there is a time where you start to hold discomfort a little bit more. But early in the healing process, when you are first coming in, it can be very hard to bring your attention to your body or to your system or even to your space at first. So like giving yourself little bits at a time until gradually you can hold more awareness and, you know, work into sensations that feel unfamiliar. So, you know, I basically use tools, like I talked about the boundaries. And then there's also being able to use your environment to anchor you. And then there's ways to use movement. So you want to work with like hypervigilance or the fight or flight response differently from the way you would a freeze. Mm-hmm. They're different parts of your nervous system. So I give like really basic ways of using movement to address what's happening. And then there are options. I kind of language, okay, if this is happening, you might try this way of doing this. This is happening, you might try this way of doing this. So that they start to learn the tools of like, okay, I can work with this. And it's not just the poses. It's the like really simple things like clenching and releasing muscles or moving anything with your breath. So it's accessible. Hopefully, what I hope is that it's accessible for people in daily life, not just when they're on a yoga mat.
Yeah.
And then we work with breath. And, you know, different techniques that are really focused on finding that how much feels right to me.
So during this class, will your audience have an opportunity to send you a chat message and say, this is what I'm feeling, and then you can offer that advice? Is that going to be part of it, or how does that
work?
Yeah,
so it's a little tricky with the class, and because there are... I don't know how many people we'll have this time. Last time we had about 25.
Oh my goodness, really?
And we actually have had people like from all over, all over the world. And for when we've been online. So I encourage folks, like I'll send out a welcome message and kind of a template if they want to read more. It's not required, but if they want to kind of read like what the curriculum is and what we're doing, they can have that as a resource. And then... I encourage them to contact me, like email me or contact me outside. And that's a little, then that way I can give a little more personal attention when it's needed.
Yeah.
They're welcome to do the chat in class. It's just tricky for me to see it while I'm teaching.
See it, answer it. You know, maybe you need to think a few minutes. Yeah, that would be kind of somewhat disruptive.
And for the people who are okay being seen, they're welcome to kind of voice at the beginning of class what's happening, or if they have requests. And like in the beginning of class, there's kind of a space for people to check in, and then they could send me a chat either privately or publicly.
Okay.
Like, hey, this is what I need today, or this is what's happening, or I'm struggling with this. And then if I see it at the beginning, I can incorporate. It's a little trickier, like as I'm teaching the class. So
sure. Now, as we know, sometimes survivors of domestic abuse, they, for circumstances, especially during this pandemic, have to live in the same house with their abuser. And oftentimes they are kind of restricted in when they can do something. So if this class is during a time when, you know, he's here, he's not at work, you know, a couple hours later I could do this. Will this kind of be recorded and stream and be streamable?
So that's such a good question. And at this point it's not. So one issue with recording is, you know, is that it's, there's not just me if I'm teaching a class. So I would need releases from everybody. And I think especially given people who may be dealing with those issues, that that's not...
You don't want that in the public.
To me, that's not... So having a live stream is great. And I've had a lot of people ask me if I could do more on-demand stuff. And it's a possibility. But I think with the workshop, it just... it's not quite right for that situation. And that is one really hard thing about online is... You know, it can, like for some people, actually going somewhere is more feasible than being online. But, you know, one thing I will say is that, you know, no one's ever going to be kept out just because they can't make one class. And it's also okay for people to come and go as they need.
Okay.
Like I never, make people stay out or say, no, you can't leave, you know, it just, I mean, the whole idea is that you have autonomy over your practice, so you take care of your needs.
Do you ever tell people they have to leave?
Like, not yet.
Weirdness out over of... here. You got to leave.
I'm not saying that can't happen. It would have to be pretty extreme. I mean, someone have to be like invading other people's space, you know.
All right, I'm out. And what were the, I know you said it was October, what was it, 12th? Is that the first class?
October 1st is the first class.
I'm sorry. And it's four subsequent weeks, same time, same day, same bat time, bat channel.
Yeah.
Okay. And the cost?
It's free.
Free?
Free.
Oh.
Oh, and the other thing is that an advocate will be available during class, which is
wonderful.
One really amazing thing about partnering with Dove is that when we were teaching it physically, I would have an advocate with me so that if people needed attention or help processing something, someone would be there. And then we've also done that, like they're available by phone during the class if someone needs to process something or just needs support during the class. Because, you know, it is a journey to come back to yourself and it can be difficult and it's important for people to feel that they're supported, you know.
I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it's a wonderful project. Do you need a mat?
No, not necessarily. It's helpful.
You have to take your shoes off.
Well, it
depends. I never take my shoes off.
You don't really have to do anything. It's your practice, right? I mean, you know, working with your feet can be really helpful on like a physical level because we have like the connective tissue in your feet is connecting to everything.
True.
But you don't have to. I mean, the folks that I teach who are in chairs, like they're not taking off their shoes because you know, it's just that would be a huge pain and, you know, more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah.
So you work with what you have. You work with where you are. That's the whole thing. There's no have to, you know?
Okay. I'm thinking if I have my socks on an oak floor, it's going to be sliding around a lot, pulling a muscle. I see disaster.
You want to be careful with socks on a slippery floor, but you could wear shoes if that just was the way you could do the practice. I mean, so the important thing is what are the resources you need to be able to do the practice and feel safe? And if wearing shoes makes you feel safe, then go ahead and wear shoes. It's your practice. It's not my practice.
Okay. Right? I always want to be able to run away at a moment's notice.
Well, you know, and that is actually a reality.
Yes. So wear shoes. Why doesn't everybody? Can't run outside with stickers. No, I'm kidding. Well, this has been great. Well, we're kind of at our show's end here. This is 30 minutes. Can you believe it's been 30 minutes?
No, I can't.
These shows, they just go so fast. And if you're just joining us, where have you been? You're late. This is Deborah King, and she is lending her time to the Dove Project to do therapeutic yoga, and it's an online class, October 1st.
October 1st to October 22nd.
22nd, and the time?
4 to 5:30 p.m.
Okay.
And it's called Regrowing Our Wings, Yoga for Healing Trauma, and you can contact Nin at Dove.
NYN at VashonDoveProject.org. You can go to the Dove Project website. I'm sure it's on there somewhere.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
Yes, please.
What else? What can we tell these nice folks before we go?
What else can I tell you? Take good care of yourself. Practice self-care.
Wear a mask.
Wear a mask. Take care of the people you love.
Yes. Wonderful advice. Okay. Anything else?
No. If anyone is interested in the MS or Cancer Center classes,
let's mention that one more time. You're working with Swedish.
Yeah, I work with Swedish medical centers. I teach a class through the MS Center at the Neuroscience Institute. So that is you can contact the MS Center, and then you can also contact the Cancer Center if you're interested in that class.
Yeah.
Or you can find me on my website. I can send you the information.
Oh, well, please give us your website.
It's deborahkingyoga.com, deborahkingyoga.
How cryptic.
Exactly.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much. It's been wonderful. I appreciate your time and what you're doing for Dove and
your
clients.
Thank you. I appreciate your time too. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I got nothing better to do. Well, Vashon, thank you very much. This has been Dove Speaks. And next show, this show is going to air a week from next Tuesday, which is the 22nd, I think. Mm-hmm. Then again on the 29th. And the show after that is, I believe, the executive director of Dove, Heidi Jackson, will be here. Because October is what am I trying to say? October is
Domestic Violence Month.
There, I knew it.
Awareness.
Now, don't do it during October. You're supposed to be aware of it.
There you go.
Yes. Sorry. Thank you, Vashon, and we'll see you next week.